How do you know that an idea you pushed was the right one?
That's a really, really good question, because when you have an idea, there's two types of people. There's people who accept the idea and think, let's give that a go. And there's people who say, that's a really bad idea, let's not do that. And it's amazing that generally 50% support your idea and the other 50% don't support your idea. I suspect you've had some of those instances yourself. I think what you've got to do is you've got to illustrate to people. So whether you do a little pilot scheme or you give them an example of why you think it's a good idea. And often the best ideas don't come from one person, they come from a series of people. So if everyone thinks they've been part of that idea, so if you come up with an idea as a group, generally that group will support the idea and they'll push it through. So that might be something like, one of the things we did at CSR is we went into a new type of construction, and that was off-site construction. So rather than building everything off-site, we'd build it on-site, we'd build it off-site, and then we'd bring it to site. We needed the builders to agree, we needed the designers to agree, we needed the builders, the tradesmen to agree. Once everyone thought it was a good idea, then generally we got some headway.
What do you do in your free time?
I've had a lot of free time in the last, I've had a lot more free time in the last 6 months because I've stopped full-time work, but I've joined a couple of other companies in advisory roles, which I really enjoy. But what I do in my free time, I travel. Up until COVID-19, we used to do a lot of travel. The other thing I do is actually I play golf. So I've just taken up golf again after not playing for a number of years. I also watch sport. I like rugby. I played rugby when I was your age at school, and I enjoy watching rugby union and rugby league.
How do you balance work and personal life?
That's a very good question. So when I was working as the chief executive of CSR, it's a very all-encompassing role. So you might get to work at 7 o'clock in the morning and you get home at 7 o'clock at night and you do a lot of travel. And my wife said to me and my kids said to me that I didn't have a very balanced life. So one of the things you find is that you're always thinking about work rather than thinking about being with the family as well. So I think it's a really important skill that when you come home from work, that you try and switch off and be what's called in the moment. So concentrate on your sisters, your brother, your mum and dad, rather than concentrate on your work, because they haven't been there. They don't understand the issues. So it's what I call being in the moment, but enjoying the family time for what it is, rather than thinking about work all the time.
How did you handle adversity and doubt?
You have a lot of adversity and you have a lot of doubt in your own decision-making. Sometimes you make a decision and people don't agree with that decision. But in your heart, if you know it's the right thing to do, then you've got to stick with that. You've got to be consistent and you've got to push it through. The other side of that is if you've made a bad decision and lots of people tell you it's a bad decision, then it's good to reflect. It's good to stop and think and say, well, how did I come up with that decision? And is it the right decision? And never be frightened to say, you know what? I think I've made the wrong decision based on the feedback I've got. So I'm going to change course. I'm going to go back to those people and say, look, I've listened, I've heard, I think I've made a bad decision here, but let's reverse it. And people respect that. You don't need to keep pushing through if you think you've made a bad decision. I think the other thing about making the right decision is getting some facts that and some data. So when I say facts and data, make sure you've done the research to say this is what I understand about the different options, And this is the data, this is the mathematical data or the business data that helps me make that decision. And you'll always come up with a bit better decision if you've got facts and data, and also if you've consulted widely with people.
Can I jump in and ask a question, Rob? If you could tell us a story about a time that you weren't successful, like whether you failed in a personal sense where you didn't, you know, things didn't turn out like you wanted, or a job didn't work out or something like that, just because it's really interesting to hear those stories.
Look, I have, like most of us, I've failed more than I've succeeded. And the times you fail is the ones when you learn more about it. My first year of engineering, in the second semester, I failed 3 out of 8 subjects. And that was as a consequence of enjoying life too much. I had a new girlfriend and I wanted to go out a lot. And guess what? The consequence of that was I failed a few subjects. What I learned from that was actually you've got to put the work in, and you can get that balance right. It doesn't need to be all one or the other. I think also I've taken on some jobs which weren't ideal. So as I was, you know, the underground coal mining was a great example. When I started doing that underground coal mining, I did it for about 9 months. It was going underground every day. It was in a very harsh environment, and I didn't really enjoy it as much as I thought I was going to. And that was fine. After 9 months, I said, right, I've had a really good experience doing this. But I decided that wasn't the long-term future for me. So I changed jobs. I changed industry. I changed from the coal mining industry into the construction industry.
Another one from up
there. Rob, how do you manage your business in the time of quarantine, COVID-19 and quarantine?
That is really, really hard. I mean, if you look at a construction site, for instance, what they're doing in Victoria is that they're saying only 25% of the normal workers on site can turn up for work. Imagine there's 20 of you doing a job and the next day only 5 can go and do the job. I think that's a really big challenge for organisations, is how you manage through that, because sometimes too few people is counterproductive. You don't get what you want to have done. I think the other thing that we need to do is stick together as a country. You watch lots of fracturing between borders. So it's important. There will be a solution to this. There will be a vaccine. And I think it's really just about everyone sticking together, following the rules, and we'll come out the other side of that. I think we're very lucky living in Australia, in the sense of, despite the fact that despite what's happening in Victoria, we are relatively, the impact has been relatively small compared to what's happening in other places like the United States of America.
So how can we become good leaders?
Oh, on the other side, if it's okay, I can't hear the question.
Oh, yes. How can we as a high school student become good leaders?
I'll bet you know today who are the natural leaders in your group. Why do they pick captain of the netball team or captain of the hockey team or the captain of the football team? And those natural leaders have a way about them where they're actually, it's not about them. It's about everyone in the team. And those leadership skills can be developed. They're not only born. And the leadership skills that you need to develop at school are, how do I actually not think about it from my own perspective, but think about it from the group's perspective? And if you can think about it from the group's perspective, then you'll be a better leader. I'm sure some of you watch rugby league. The best leaders are the ones who get the best out of the team rather than try and score all the tries. And that, if that means throwing the pass, which means you're not going to score the try, that's good leadership. If it means making sure that everyone else is getting the accolades rather than the captain all the time, then people will feel part of that team. And those leadership skills, what I'd say to you is, look at people who you think is a good leader, is a good teacher, I bet you've all had a good teacher. Rav's a good teacher. And I bet you've all had a teacher that you don't think is very good. So what is Rav doing, or what is that good teacher doing that makes you feel good about yourself? And what is that other leader doing that doesn't make you feel good? Do less of the thing that the leader is not doing, the poor leader is doing, and do more of the stuff that the good leader is doing. I see a few nodding heads there.
Can you tell us about the most challenging engineer project that you have been involved with?
Yes, I can. The most challenging one for me was trying to get the building industry to build in a different way. If you think about cars, for example, when you ordered a car originally or a motorbike, you went in and you ordered it, and 6 months later, the guy rang you and said your car's ready because they had to go and build it. Now, because of production lines and how things can happen quickly, you can generally pick up that car the next day. The construction industry is still very slow. If you look at how long it takes to build a house or an apartment block, it sometimes takes years. And the opportunity we saw was to get the industry to think differently about how they build. That was a big challenge because people don't like to change. And when you know there's a better way to do it, pushing that through is very difficult, and you've got to take people with you. So that was probably one of the most challenging ones. Also, I think when you're dealing with challenging people who think differently to you and they have very different opinions, rather than trying to change that opinion, I think it's always useful to listen to that opinion and see if you can come up with a consensus halfway between what you believe and what they believe.
What are your success habits?
My success habits, I think from a work point of view, and it's one for life as well, I think be keen and be committed. So if somebody gives you, a job to do or to turn up at school, the most important thing is be keen and be committed to it. So I'm going to give it 100%. If you come with the mindset that I'm not that keen, I don't want to do it, then you will generally not succeed. I think the other thing is one of my success habits is punctuality and tidiness. I mean, they sound very simple, but there's nothing worse to me than people turning up late, because what it says is that their time is more important than everyone else's time. And I think make sure like all of you are today, you're well-dressed, you're tidy, you're clean. The same goes for work. It doesn't mean you wear a uniform, depending on the role, but be tidy, be clean, be punctual. They're the most important things about being successful at work. And generally, the people who are keen and committed, they were the ones who'd be picked out to be given more responsibility and more accountability.
Another one.
You've told us about your business, your success habits, but what are you most proud of as a person?
That's a really, really interesting question. I think when you're a parent, when you have kids of your own, you really want your kids to be balanced and successful. And I don't mean success from the point of money or jobs or whatever. You want them to be good citizens. So I'm very proud of my three children. They're good citizens. They're all doing different things, and they're finding their way in the world, but they're doing it in a constructive way. I think the other thing that I am proud of in terms of work is that I hopefully help some people achieve their success. So make them successful, make the people that work for you successful. And that's a great sense of satisfaction. You make a lot of friends that way, and try and help others develop rather than thinking about yourself all the time. I think the other thing is find the job that you find rewarding. So it's Look, whether it's driving a forklift, working in a retail environment, whether it's in sales and marketing, whether it's in engineering, find the thing that that you enjoy, you want to jump out of bed and do in the morning. And that's a very easy thing to say, but most of you will have that opportunity growing up in Australia is to find that work or that fulfillment. The thing about working is that it gives you a sense of satisfaction outside your home life. And I think that if I could help some people be successful, then that gives me a great sense of satisfaction.
I was just going to pause it here for a moment, actually, and ask the kids a bit about what they are thinking about in their jobs, because I think then we can come back to sort of what are actually some of these jobs like in reality.
Yeah.
Can everybody, anyone who thinks they know what they might, actually, can everybody stand up? And sit down if you're really sure on what you want to do. Oh, we have a few here really sure. Okay. So there are a lot of people who don't know what they want to do. Then sit down if you think you might be interested in some technology. Sit down if you think you might be interested in health. Sit down if you think you might be interested in engineering, kind of making things. And what's else? Well, what are the other things that people are thinking about? Sit down if you think you're interested in education. Business. And professional sport. And anything else that you guys are interested in?
Science.
Sorry? Defense. Excellent. Cool. So for the people who also were kind of in, who some people said they knew what they wanted to do, who put up their, who, can you stand up, those people who sat down first, who knew what they wanted to do, who thought they knew? Okay, and what, can you tell me a couple of things that you are interested in, what you think about? An engineer. So we've got one person who wants to be an engineer.
Good.
What's it? One wants to be a medic. Doctor?
Good.
Another engineer. Okay. Thank you very much, guys. And for those who are still really, so for those who were kind of interested in the engineering and the science piece, but not quite sure, you sort of thought interested but not sure, what are these questions that you want to ask someone who has been an engineer and run businesses, lots of engineers? What do you want to know? Come on, if you've got a question, come and ask him, because this is the point. It's like, what do you want to know? You want to be an engineer. Do you know what an engineer does? Sorry? Yeah, give a minute to think. Okay, so if someone else who's thought about engineering, but not quite sure, what do you want to know about being an engineer? What do you have to do with it?
Well,
I'm going to start, Rob. I'm still not entirely clear what engineers do all day. So could you explain that? My husband's an engineer as well, and I still don't know.
Well, there's no defined engineering in the sense that there's the traditional engineer. If you're a mechanical engineer, you might be designing the gearbox in a new Tesla. So if you might be designing the engine in a motorbike. Okay, so that's traditional mechanical engineering. Traditional civil engineering is about designing buildings and bridges and structural systems. So that's a very different type of engineering, but it's about doing stuff. It's about creating stuff, which is obviously attractive to some people. But not all engineers stay as engineers. There's technology engineers, like Allegra's husband, who works at Uber. So he's an engineer, but he's now running a business that is involved with technology and engineering, but he's able to understand the problem that the team is trying to solve, so he can generally help solve that problem. So engineers, I would say, need to be creative, they need to be innovative, but they also need to understand people. And when engineers just think about the problem at hand, generally they're very good engineers in terms of working in the back office, like a design engineer. But if you can take that to, to the next step, most of the guys who run the Formula One teams are engineers who have actually been really good at understanding how to bring everything together. And I think that's what good engineers can do is take their technical skills, but also translate it into a much broader problem.
You're still thinking. When you wanted to do business,
you had a question about. Awesome business question.
Well, you had, Well, Rob, I was going to ask you. Ooh, whoops, have I done?
No, that's good. All good.
You can see us still. I think I've just stopped.
I can see you.
Oops, sorry, I have no idea what I've done. Excuse me.
No, I can hear you and see you, Allegra.
That is, it's maybe down bottom left. For the other question, I always wanted to also know about you hired a lot of people. So, and hired a lot of people who worked in business and engineering. So, when they're in front of you in an interview, what are the tricky questions you ask them and what do you look for?
I ask a lot of the questions that just, so the Allegra's question is, what do we look for when we're interviewing people? I ask a lot of the similar questions to the ones you asked me earlier, actually. There were some very good questions about what are some of the things you've succeeded at? What are some of the things that you've failed at? How do you think about your leadership skills? And it's a terrible question, but what would you like out of this job? What would you like to achieve out of this job? And if somebody says to me, I just want the money, that's probably not somebody I'm going to hire, even though there must be payment for work. You wanna think about it from the point of view of saying, well, this person's going to add something to the organization, but also get something out of themselves. So if you can get that sense that it's going to be helpful for the individual, for the employee, but it's also helpful for the company. And those probing questions are exactly the ones you asked me earlier. What are some of your successes? What are some of the things you failed at? It's always good to understand people's personal beliefs as well. So what I mean about that, not religious beliefs or any of those sort of things, what do they believe in terms of what a good team should look like? How could they contribute to a good team? And I think sport is a really good analogy. For those of you who play or watch sport, the really good teams get that stuff right.
What do I need to start learning and doing now to be an engineer in a few years?
Well, are you studying? Maybe tell me the subjects. What subjects are you studying now?
Studying engineering studies.
Yeah.
Industrial technology, timber, and maths advanced.
Yeah. And which of those subjects do you really like?
Sorry?
Which of those subjects do you really like?
I like engineering studies and timber.
Okay, well, I'm sure you'll be a good engineer because the most important thing is to enjoy those subjects. And if you enjoy them, then you'll build on them. And I think the most important thing is to keep adding to those subjects. So if you're doing advanced maths, that's fantastic, quite frankly. It's never the easiest subject. But also, I think continue and do physics. When you say timber, what does timber mean? Is that carpentry?
Woodwork.
Yeah, okay, great. Well, I did metalwork. I absolutely love metalwork. You know, you could choose woodwork or metalwork. I chose metalwork and I ended up being a mechanical engineer. If you like working with timber and you like working with structures, then maybe you could think about structural engineering or building or carpentry. And if those things are what motivate you, then I'm sure you'll find the right career out of that.
Thank you.
Rob, just for those who are interested in business as well, because there are quite a few of the kids here who are interested in business, how do you What do you look for from a business person if you're not looking for an engineer, but if you're looking for someone who's you're hiring more on the business side rather than the engineering side, what are you looking for there in an interview? And what do you ask them?
I think it's not advanced maths, but it's a good understanding of numbers. So a profit and loss statement, which is what all businesses run on, whether it's a school, whether it's a company, whether it's, you know, the local footy club, it actually has to have, everything has a profit and loss statement. And what the profit and loss statement says, I've got my revenue. How much money did I take in? Take the McDonald's as a good example. How many burgers and fries did they sell at McDonald's? And how much was their cost of goods? So how much were the burger patties, the buns and the fries? And how much was the labor? And how much was the rent on the building? And all you do is you take that top line, the revenue number, and you subtract everything that's a cost. And if you've got more money at the end of the month than you started with, you made a profit. If you got less money, you made a loss. That's all a profit and loss statement is. I think those of you who enjoy business, make sure you understand what a profit and loss statement is. It sounds complicated, but it's not. My revenue has got to be higher than my costs, and that is what a P&L. So I'd encourage you as part of the subjects to make sure that, and for the engineers, is to make sure you understand what a profit and loss statement is.
Great. Any other questions? There's plenty of questions. I need to be
right. What do you wish you knew in high school?
Oh, gosh, I wish I knew a lot of things. No, I think I don't think you want to rush. I think you want to enjoy life. It's a long, you're a long time in work. So, you know, I've been working for 32 years, which sounds like a long time when you're just starting out. But at high school, I think you just want to enjoy the experience, but also pick up little cues. As I said earlier, who are the good teachers and what do those good teachers do? Because they'll have good leadership skills. What do I wish I knew at school? I wish I knew what a profit and loss statement was, because I didn't know. I learned that in probably my second job, and it turned on a whole lot of lights for me in terms of what I wanted to do. I suddenly understood what that meant, and that was a great learning for me. I think what else I learned at high school was throw yourself into everything. So even though you may not be the best person at maths or the best footy player, give it a go, because you never know what might surprise you. I think the other thing I learned at high school is you make some fantastic friends that you'll be in contact with for life, and make sure you maintain those contacts, because later on in life, you never know where those people are going to be. And it's always good to have lots of different networks through high school and through university or trade qualifications. Keep in touch with people. It doesn't take a lot of time, and it actually is a great thing as you move through your career.
Another question? Mickey, thank you.
Was there a decision you made in the past that you regret today? If so, what is it?
As I said before, there was lots of decisions I made that I regretted. I think somebody said to me that when you've got there's an old saying that nobody ever fired a CEO too early. And that's a negative. But if you know the person isn't the right person for the job, then you're better off making that decision early. It's good for the person and it's good for the organization. So sometimes I just wanted somebody to be better, but they weren't going to be better. So I left those too long. The other decisions I made that I regretted was, I think I didn't take enough time with a couple of decisions we made about investing money. So when you're investing money, you need lots of facts and data. There was one situation in Western Australia where I signed off on a $10 million glass plant, and I didn't look at the plans. I didn't look at the size of the structure, and all I did was look at the numbers without actually going to Western Australia and understanding it from the customer's perspective. When we built that plant, it was 4 times bigger than it needed to be, and the plant lost money, and we ended up shutting it down. So that was a bad decision that cost the company $10 million, and that was one I regret.
How would you approach underperforming employees?
Well, I think you've got to be, it's a bit like that example I used before. It's not that you just jump straight to the point and say you're underperforming, you know, bugger off. Actually, you've got to tell people, you've got to be really honest with people. And what I mean by that is, and that's a very hard thing to do, but you've also got not got to break somebody in that environment, in the sense that you've got to say, look, this is how I feel. I feel as though you're not putting as much effort into this job as you could do. Why is that? And have a good conversation about it. What poor managers do and poor leadership looks like is they don't have the conversation. So that it's a complete surprise to the individual when the boss turns around and says, mate, you're not doing a good job, get lost. And you go, well, I thought I was doing a good job. So I think the most important thing is to be honest with people and give everyone a couple of chances. You know, you say, look, you've been in the job for 3 months. You're not actually fulfilling all the requirements. These are the things that you need to do better. And I'm going to help you do those. Maybe another 2 months later saying you've improved in this area and this area, but you haven't quite met the brief. And if that continues, then you've got to take action. But tell people early what's working well and tell people early what's not working well. And be as constructive as you possibly can. Hard thing to do, but really important for the individual.
Rob, just a follow-on question for that. Is it hard to do that, to have those conversations?
I think it's really hard, Allegra. And it's it takes a long time to learn it, because our natural happy place is to avoid those discussions. I think that's the same for everyone. But if you can be honest in how you have that conversation, don't do it in front of other people. That's the worst thing you can do. You know, telling somebody they're a terrible fullback and they should be playing front row in front of the whole group destroys that person. But actually having the conversation one-on-one and letting them express their opinion on why, you know, what they're feeling is a really hard one, because you've got to talk about feelings, and you know, most of us don't like talking about our feelings. It's an unhappy, it's an uncomfortable place to be. But yeah, so it's but honestly, when you've had the conversation, it feels so much better for both parties.
Another question?
Running almost out of time. I was going to say, lastly, sort of one more question I had, and I'd love you to do your one thing for you, is, you know, if there are just a couple of skills or attributes you look for when you hire somebody, what are they? So if you're saying, you know, excluding that, you know, is it focused on the technical or is it focused on other things as well?
I think there needs to be a level of competence in terms of the ability to do the role, but also a willingness to learn. So take the punctuality and the tidiness. That's a ticket to the game. You won't get past the interview unless you're punctual and tidy and clean. But it's probably one for the girls and the boys to think about. A girl will tell you why she can't do the job. And a boy will tell you he's done it 10 times and he's the best in the world at it. And the truth lies somewhere in between those two. So my encouragement to the girls in the group is to don't undersell yourself, in the sense that you convince yourself why you can't do a role. Actually, convince yourself why you can do the role and tell people that you're willing to learn. And for the boys is don't BS. If you say, I'm really keen on doing the role, I've done something like it, but I really want to learn. Because the interviewer can spot both. And I think girls need to be better at selling their capability, and boys need to be honest about what they want to learn rather than they say, I can do that already. So I think that's a really important one, is to just be willing to learn, give it a go, and ask questions. Everyone loves it when you ask a question. So if you, and a lot of boys on construction sites, for example, they hurt themselves. They injure themselves with a nail gun or something because they're too scared to ask the question about how does that thing operate. And I think that's a really important one. Don't be frightened to ask a question. But also I encourage the girls to put themselves forward about why they can do a job, because you'll surprise yourself how capable you actually are.
Rob, a question from me on behalf of the students here. They are going to be possibly going into some sort of university course,
yes,
or TAFE course or apprenticeship in the near future. Talk to us about what your take is on the impact of things like carbon and environmental issues,
yep,
that will have an impact on businesses of the future or jobs of the future.
Yeah, okay. I reckon, Rab, that's a really good question. I think these things change slower than people think. So I don't think work is going to change, you know, overnight. Even COVID, okay, we're all working from, a lot more people are working from home, but it's actually good for people to come together, like your learning environment. I suspect everyone's enjoying, in inverted commas, being back at school rather than staring at a screen and trying to learn, because it's the social interaction we get with others, which is really about what school and work is about. And it, and if we can get those things right, then that hasn't changed for 4,000 years. In terms of carbon, there's a natural decarbonisation of the economy, but that shouldn't stop you thinking about going and working in a coal-fired power plant. They'll be around for a long time. It's just there's a transition happening through most of those things. I think a good understanding of technology is absolutely essential. I think you guys are absolutely in the right space, because you've grown up with iPhones and tablets and computers, and that gives you a great head start against the older generation who feel uncomfortable in those environments. So think about technology. Think about the thing you love. I wouldn't get too head up about whether this job is going to be around in 10 years' time, because if you're 15 or 16 today, by the time you're 40 or 50, you'll probably change jobs, the statistics say, 3 or 4 times, and you'll retrain. And that doesn't mean going back to university or back to TAFE. It'll just be a new skill that you've learned, something else that attracts you. And that keeps you motivated by changing careers or jobs every 2 or 3 years. And I don't, and the point, Rab, about whether it's university or TAFE college or an apprenticeship, each of those things is fantastic. The great thing about doing something like an apprenticeship, it's a great way to run your own business. So, you know, if you do a carpentry apprenticeship, there's a good chance that you're going to be able to run your own business and be a subcontractor. And that's a great way to make a living. If you go to TAFE college to do bricklaying or to do, computer studies, there is so many jobs available in terms of IT, because there is so much yet to do in terms of technology and getting it right. And if you want to be an engineer or a doctor, I tell you what, we're going to need lots of doctors and we're going to need lots of engineers, because the world continues to grow, the population continues to grow. So we need to build stuff and we're going to have an aging workforce. So we're going to have to look after those older people. As you know, a lot of the debate about COVID is how we're not looking after our old people as well as we should. And that's a really big challenge for society. So I wouldn't be too worried about the career path. There's certain things, you know, maybe I wouldn't want to be in textiles in Australia, because there's a very small market. Most of those things are manufactured overseas. But the technology of design in textiles, the technology of design in computing, all of those things, there's going to be heaps and heaps of jobs for you guys.
Thank you, Rob. You got another question? Last one.
Hey, Rob, over your lifetime, how much money have you made?
Well, I've been very fortunate to live in a generation and work hard where I don't know. I've never added the number up. But, my first job was at Macca's. I was earning $3.01 an hour. I still remember the pay slip. But when I finished work at CSR, I was earning over $1 million a year. But that was what the chief executive was paid. So right from the $3 an hour to the $1 million in the last year I worked at CSR, it's a lot of money. But there's lots of jobs in between that pay well. You can, you know, get a mortgage, bring up your family, and Australia is a great place to do that. It's only limited by the effort you put in.
Thank you so much, Rob. I really appreciate that. And yeah, it's just been great to hear your differences. I learned something every time I listen to you.
Well, I've really enjoyed the conversation. It's a tough media to do it. So if you guys are keen, I'm very happy to come out to the school when those things are allowed, and we can do a chat one on one. So all I say is thank you for your time today. You look like a great bunch. I hope you're glad to be back at school. Grab life by the throat and don't worry too much about COVID-19 and coronavirus. We'll work through that. I suspect, I have a prediction for you. You can put it in your diary. On the 13th of August, 2021, we won't even be talking about the virus. So we'll see. The Russians have developed a vaccine, and I'm sure there's lots of vaccines around the corner. So good luck, everyone, and thanks for your time today.
Thank you very much for your time, Rob.